Welcome to After Hours. We'll call this the post Bears game After Hours. What a game. What a game. Comments left to the experts. Guest who's a frequent guest on the show is my friend Chris Green, who is a great jazz man. How do you feel about the title of being jazz man? I mean, does that...
I'll take it. I mean, I always say on the show, I was the kid who grew up listening to nothing but Prince and Michael Jackson, and jazz was just some old man music. And then one day, when I'm 16 years old, it hits me. So now, you know, I wear that badge with honor and pride.
Good.
You know.
Now, talk again, Chris, because I found it always fascinating. What was the catalyst for that change in your musical taste?
Well, 16 years old, you know, listening to the pop of the day, MC Hammer, Public Enemy, all that stuff. And then, you know, I'm in jazz band. I'm playing, you know, saxophone. It's a hobby. It's always a good time, fun. You know, you get to cut class for rehearsals and assemblies. You know,
it's a way to cut class.
You know, so I'm sticking with it. And then my band director's always like, you need to listen to this stuff because this is important. This is your instrument. I'm like, whatever. That stuff sucks. And then
wait, there's this Clarence Clemons guy.
Right. Clarence Clemons or whatever. I was like, you know, Bruce Springsteen's all right. But, you know, that jazz stuff. And then he's like, all right, go home and listen to Coltrane's My Favorite Things tonight. And I'm like, fine, whatever. And I listen to it.
And
I'm
that
like,
literally changed your life.
And I'm like, this stuff is amazing. I'm like, wow, thank you. And so then pretty much from there, it's like, who did this Coltrane play with? We played with Miles Davis. And then you just
go on through Miles Davis and Eric Dolphy and that whole crowd.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, I read an interesting piece in the New York Times this morning about Jan Wenner, who used to run... Who invented Rolling Stone magazine.
Okay.
And he said in there a very interesting thing. The author was talking to him about contemporary music, and he said, rock and roll is gone. Rock and roll is done. And he said, rock and roll is going to wind up like jazz. And I thought, that's really kind of unfair, because there are so many talented jazz people. You and your quartet among them.
Yeah, this town's overrun with them. I mean, maybe he means that's a. I have to read the article.
Yeah,
because it's a pretty interesting statement. I think recently it was some R&B star. Oh, who was it? Somebody was like, R&B is dead. So it's like you. It's easy to say that, you know, if you're talking purely on like MTV or mass media or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about like the little rooms that I play or just the general community at large, like we're all, you know, we're thankfully things seem to be back up and running with the scene. Thankfully.
Well, now, I mean, you've had, and I know you've been on the show during the whole pandemic.
Yes.
When things for your career and your music have been basically shut down.
Yes.
You're now sort of out of your shell, you and the guys, aren't you?
Yeah, thankfully. We're kind of making up for lost time. I mean, we've got the new album out, and that's getting some good reviews. And it's kind of, interestingly enough, like as we talked about before, I mean, part of the album was recorded before the shutdown. One of the songs was recorded after. So it kind of captures, if you will, a snapshot of, you know, our life before, during, and after the shutdown.
I've had a few performers on in the last few months, and I was curious for them to answer the question. I'm going to ask you, how did this 2-year sort of, you're sort of locked away for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're certainly all playing maybe with each other, but also by yourselves.
Right.
How has it changed philosophically your music?
That's a good question. So, one of the things about me is that I've got a list of things to do. I've always got like the things I always joke with my mother-in-law, like these are the things I need to do for complete world domination. I just put them on my iPhone thing. Like, I need to do this, need to make that move, need to practice this, whatever. And then there's a list. I have a playlist of solos that I need to learn, you know, just for my own education, just to get my language and my command of my instrument better. And so It gets longer and longer. As I hear a solo, I'm like, oh, I need to learn that one day. And so you're like, man, if I only had the time to really work on this stuff, I'd be incredible. And then
you have the time.
Then I have the time. And so what I spent a lot of time doing was just learning solos, you know, orally, just, you know, learning them. Just once I would pick one person to focus on and learn about five solos through them, and then five solos from somebody else. And so what I found is when I get back, I'm starting not so much to play like my heroes, but I'm able to think like them.
And you can also feel their influence then,
yes,
too.
Yes, I can feel their influence, and I can also kind of take apart. I've gotten a lot better, like, hearing a person and immediately zeroing in on, like, who their influences are.
So this period for you has been a period of growth.
Thankfully, yes. I mean, my experience is obviously lucky, you know, more fortunate than a lot of people.
Sure.
But yeah, thankfully my wife was in a position where she could work at home. I was helping my son with his Zoom school stuff. But when I wasn't helping him with stuff and tending to family stuff, I could retreat in my studio and work on stuff. And, you know, with the hope that, hey, hopefully one day I'll be able to put this stuff back into practice. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the time was just spent, like, you know, working on stuff that I've needed to work on for years.
That's,
you know,
great, Chris. I'm so glad to hear that. We'll continue on after a short break with Chris Green, saxophonist extraordinaire. You can go to Chris Green with an E, jazz.com, to get a ton of information, to buy some CDs, see what's coming up. We'll talk about some upcoming concerts, and we'll talk about the growth of your compatriots. And
yes,
you've got to tell, as I make you do every time you're on, how this group came together, because
yes,
I'm fascinated by that.
Yes,
so stay tuned, and we'll be back. Welcome back. I'm in conversation with Chris Green, jazz man. Chris Green with an E, jazz.com is a place to get more information. Now, your three compatriots in the Chris Green Quartet, remind me, you don't have to remind me, remind your loyal listeners out there how this group came together.
Well, the good thing about Chicago is everybody sort of knows everybody. So I've known Mark, my bass player, Mark Piani. I've known him the longest, and I've been making music with him the longest.
And how long is the longest?
Mid-95, something like that, 1995. We were in this wacky band together called Dagnabbit. And it was
wacky name,
and
too.
The leader was the engineer at the Beat Kitchen. And pretty much, it's a good thing he worked there, because we were really too weird to play anywhere else. But it was a great band. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, just a lot of antics and sort of jazz based, but sort of punk based, and just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I remember having a lot of fun. So Mark was the guy when I met him. I was like, okay, if I ever just put an acoustic band together, he's the man. And so Dave,
what was it about him that told you he was the man? I mean, you had a similar philosophy of music,
similar philosophies, but, you know, we contrast in some ways, and we have healthy debates about music. But at the same time, like, he, like me, he, like, my idols growing up were Prince and Michael Jackson, and
right,
and a lot of hip hoppers growing up. His idols were, like, you know, he's a big Zappa fan. Like, I'll talk your ear off at a party about Prince all day. He'll talk your ear off about Frank Zappa all day. That's his guy. So the fact that he's bringing that kind of stuff, aesthetic, into music, into what we do, is important. So Damien, my piano player, we've been in a band together. We've worked together the longest in my band. I had a band which was kind of the flip side of the quartet, more funky oriented with some jazz underpinnings, called New Perspective. And so he was my last keyboard player in that band, and then when we made the shift to play acoustic stuff with the quartet, he was like the first guy. And so with Steve Corley, our drummer, we had another drummer, fantastic guy, but we were ready to kind of make a change and really wanted to, like, kick things into high gear. And I was writing stuff that I knew everybody would have to really work on. I didn't want to just play standards.
Sure,
you
sure,
know, we
sure.
play standards, but I wanted to do things in an interesting, unique way. And I knew Steve was always our first call sub. And one day he comes in and just plays the gig, nails everything, like he just completely kills it. And so he leaves, I pay him his money, he leaves, and then me and Mark and Damien are standing at the venue for like 2 hours afterwards, like, that was the greatest gig we've ever played. Like,
wow.
Why?
You just knew.
Yeah, we need to have that. And what happened tonight needs to happen all the time.
And how long ago was that? You guys have been together as a quartet for some time.
Yeah,
now,
the,
right?
The band's been together since 2005. Steve joined in 2011.
Wow.
So pretty much it's been Steve and
me. Yes, I know. I've met these guys, and they're lovely, wonderful people, not only great musicians. Mm-hmm. How did the pandemic treat them? Is it the same way in which you challenge yourself?
Yeah, well, pretty much. Well, Steve, like, for instance, we joke that we all are married to gainfully employed. We have gainfully employed wives. So
that is the key for anybody who wants to be a jazz man.
So we joked about that. But fortunately, like, both Mark and Damien are both private instructors, so they taught a lot. Mark taught a lot of bass lessons and studio lessons on via Zoom, mm-hmm. and I think he teaches guitar too. And then Damien does piano lessons, so he was giving his piano lessons over Zoom and everything. And Steve actually is he works for the school district, so I mean, even though there's a pandemic going on,
he's
pretty much on call, so he just has to mask up and do what he needs to do. So
let me ask you: I've talked to some musicians who think that there is some kind of a viable future in remote Zooming concerts. I don't like to think so. As a consumer, Zoom doesn't do it for me at all. There's no, it lacks the physical intimacy of seeing a show.
The physical intimacy, there's always a delay. You know, even when you're having conversations on Zoom, there's always that little bit of a delay, you know.
Agreed.
I mean, I participated in a few, like, Zoom recording sessions, like, where I would record, and somebody would send me, like, a skeleton of a track or a click track or something, and I would put my part on it, and then somebody would sync all the parts together and it would be on one big screen.
Yeah.
And those were really cool. I mean, those are really cool. Those are cool to look at. It was a great thing to see during the pandemic, like, people still making music and pushing forward. But it for what we do as a quartet, it wouldn't work.
But it's also, Chris, what seems to be missing from those kinds of things when it's four remote artists performing is the interplay that one can see on a stage.
Absolutely. As we're making eye contact, we're looking at each other. What I play will directly influence what the other guys are doing.
Exactly.
And vice versa. And it's really hard to do. And people have, during the pandemic, were like, or during the shutdown, were like, hey, you guys should do something. And I'm like, it's just not going to work for what we do. If we were a rock band or a pop band or a hip-hop band, that kind of thing would probably work. Everybody can kind of cut and paste their tracks. But the very thing that makes what we do interesting is the fact that we're having a conversation in real time.
So when you guys got back together a little before, but this July, mm-hmm. not that many months ago, you performed over three or four nights at the Jazz Showcase.
Yep, four nights. Yep.
What was that like? Was it, I mean, maybe you'd been together before, but this was really a big coming out party.
Yeah, you know, the showcase is really, it's a special thing. It's a really special room.
Yeah.
And I don't know how this happened, but I found myself every night kind of doing some informal polling. Like, hey, where's everybody from? And so if some people would be, hey, I'm from the South Side. Hey, I'm from the North Side. Hey, I'm from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Hey, we're in town from Cleveland. Hey, we're in town from Finland. Hey, we're in town from Australia.
One of the things about the showcase. The showcase does attract, still because of the reputation of the showcase, it attracts an international crowd.
It really
crowd.
Does.
And I mean, it's a very local crowd, but you will find in that crowd on any given night people from around the world.
Yep. I would say like a third of our audience were like our fans.
Sure.
A third were like people out and about. For a night on the town, like, let's go see who's playing at the showcase.
Sure.
The other third were like those people from out of town. I've heard of this place, you know, this world renowned showcase. Let's go see some quote unquote Chicago jazz.
See, that's one of the great things about a place like the showcase is for most people, especially out of towners, out of countryers, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter who's playing. They know they're going to get
right.
a certain, it's like, you know, the old days of the blues clubs
right.
here.
Exactly.
They know they're going to get something that represents
very much
Chicago
so.
Jazz.
Right. Like you go to Buddy Guy's, you're going to see some top-notch blues.
Yep.
You go to Showcase or you go to Andy's. You're going to see some top-notch this. If you go to Space and Evanston, you're going to see some top, you could see anything, you know.
Let me ask you, how was the crowd? Because I would think many in the crowd, this might have been one of the first times they were back in a club.
Really appreciative.
Yeah.
I mean, energetic, appreciative. I joke they clapped in all the right spots, but they were really, really, really fun. And I always try to take, like, it's funny, like, once you, jazz is, you know, has this reputation of being stuffy, and I try to fight that. So I'm trying to joke with the crowd and, you know, show them that we're having fun. And
well, you're not Miles Davis. You're not turning your back on the crowd to play.
No. But they see us having fun, and consequently, they're like, okay, those guys are enjoying themselves, and maybe I should, okay.
That's what I think is the key to live music,
mm-hmm.
is that collective energy that's shared between audience
Absolutely.
And performers. And I think it energizes and empowers the performers.
Yes.
You
yes.
find that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if they're having a good time, then we're enjoying ourselves, you know, and consequently, or inversely, if they see us having a good time, they're going to be like, oh, wow, this, you know, they look like they're having a great time, you know. So it ends up working.
I will for you, ladies and gentlemen. Chris is going to be here all the way until 5:45. We'll play. Krista Flores, the great engineer, has a CD, and we'll play a little something after you listen to the news. And we'll also talk about, we just talked about his previous jazz showcase show. She'll be at City Winery. It's coming Monday.
Monday the 19th. Yep.
And we'll talk about that.
Yes.
We'll talk about that because I also want to talk about the difference in various venues
okay.
that takes place, too. That
okay.
You must kind of before, you must talk to the guys and say, forgive my caveman attitude about it. You must go, what do you think we should play at this
right.
place? I mean, it basically must be something like,
right.
like that. So you will hear. Chris, during the news, will interrupt the news to ask Krista to play something, and you'll hear it when we come back after the news. So please stay tuned on this rainy, soggy Monday. Chris Green was just saying, this flew by. When it flew by, because you were an hour early when you got
That's
here,
true.
Which
I
is
was.
Fantastic.
I was
you wanted to be on so much. I do want you to hear, Chris will be playing with his quartet at City Winery next week, and though they may not be playing this exact song, I want you to hear some of what Chris does with his guys. What are we going to hear? Chris,
so
will play it.
This is a song called Divers, written by our bassist, Mark Piani. All I can tell you is you compare what you hear, and the story behind it is he wrote it. He was biking through Door County, and he basically was stopped to get some ice cream, and he noticed that that there was a family frolicking in the water and enjoying themselves and splashing around and enjoying themselves. And so that inspired this song, which may sound really different from what I just described, but
I'm sure it will. Where's the ice cream part of this
right.
song? Where's the ice cream part? Let's hear a few minutes of this, Krista. Thank you. Describe the show that's coming up at City Winery. What are you going to do?
Well, one of the great things about releasing albums independently is that you can have as many album release parties as you want. And so this will be my fourth. So I'll just keep milking that. But no, we put out the album in May, and just we're just really excited behind it. So yeah, To your question, so we're playing at the City Winery on the 19th. We were talking about the showcase where like a third of the audience is there to see us, and then
right,
the other two are like
out
for a night. The cool thing about a City Winery or space is like everybody's there to see you, so it's a completely different energy. Like everyone's there to see your thing. So we're just gonna like go kind of go in the we're playing with the showcase. We kind of have to make sure that you know, giving people a little bit of traditional jazz to kind of like hook them in, and then we can do our thing. But if
it's a bigger umbrella,
if you're coming to see us, you know we're capable of playing anything at any time. So that's kind of what we're catering to, the people who are coming to see us.
What's the future hold for you? I don't want to, you know, take you out 8 years or something, but what's the future hold? I mean, you've come back with a bang, yeah. I think a real bang, Showcase and Winery and a new CD. What's next?
More recording. Hopefully, we'd like to do some like scoring for like independent films. That's kind of like on our radar. I've done some writing for like some theater productions around town. So I'd like to kind of do that. Get in the discipline of like writing. I'm writing for myself and writing for my bandmates, or I'm arranging horns for like other projects or recording sessions for other people. So now it's just like I'd like to try the discipline of writing for something other than one of my projects. So
well, that's part of what you did during the pandemic. You started to challenge yourself more,
right.
And I think that's a holdover from the pandemic. And
right.
What you did that to sort of challenge yourself with new
right.
creative roads.
Exactly. So now it's just, you know, it's like, I've read with the whole thing I was talking about, like learning all these solos, it's made me a better musician. Now it's getting into things that are hopefully going to make me a better, stronger writer and writing for other mediums. And
maybe
kind of
even make you more money.
That too.
Yeah, there's no money in jazz.
My wife would like that.
There's no money in, well, she has a job though.
That's true.
And you've got your 11-year-old boy, what's he play?
He actually plays really good at piano and really good at drums. And I'm trying not
to. What's he listen to? Beside you.
Well, fortunately, if I've got something in the car, he likes it. Like, Mom is she's in charge of the top 40 when she drives him around. I'm in charge of the old school jazz and 70s funk and R&B and stuff. So he's well versed in everybody from like Lizzo to, you know, Parliament Funkadelic and everybody in between. So
that's a big in between. Chris Green, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always a pleasure to listen to you. And knock 'em dead next week.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
City Winery.
Thank you.
And say hi to the boys for me.
I sure will. All right.